You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, this is awkward. I don't really know how to start or what to do or whether I should shake hands with people or hug them. I screwed up ordering a beer here at Saucy Brew Works a moment ago. Being out in public is still a little awkward, but we got to do it, and it's fun. I'm already having a blast, and we're just starting another Massive Report podcast for the first time since March 9th of 2020.
Yeah.
The last game was the 15th, right, against Seattle.
So yeah. No, that was like the first March game. 7th.
Or, you're right.
Yeah,
that
was Seattle.
Was
mm-hmm. Yeah, and here we are together again after however many months that is, 15 months, here at our new location at Saucy Brew Works here at Harrison West at 3rd in Michigan, not far from the new stadium as we were talking before we started. Saucy Brew Works, the best beer in Columbus and the place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Murph, Bart, Alex, Sam, I'm Brian. Ori is not here. Could have brought his girlfriend, who's in town visiting him, but apparently embarrassed by us.
So no, that's probably wise for the wisest.
This is going to, I don't know, maybe Ori just doesn't like to share his feelings, because we all have a lot of feelings around the table tonight. We're going to get deep into our feels. And remember, a place that I swear just opened, Crew Stadium, it was the talk of the soccer world 22 years ago last month. In 1999, and now we say goodbye to the old girl on Saturday night against Chicago. Then we'll get to the game here at the end, but especially with the form Chicago's been in, really not a whole lot to talk about, but plenty to talk about when we think back to all of our great memories at the stadium. And we all know that the new place is going to be amazing, and we're going to make new memories there. But it's kind of like, having grown up in the Northwest, when they imploded the King Dome, whenever that was, 2000, as much as watching sports in that place was like watching sports in a sewer pipe, when they dropped it to the ground, I became very emotional. And I expect that Saturday night, Bart, I'm going to feel the same way, and I know you are.
Oh, yeah. On the plus side, I do like that, they are going to be, it's not going to be, they're not going to be exploding it. It's going to be, continue to be used, and continue ostensibly to be something that the community is going to be able to use. But, I was at that first game against New England. We were in literally the last row at the top, of the bleachers, and it was there with my dad, and it's just... So that was the first. I think I went to one game, back in the Horseshoe, but that was when I really fell in love with the team. I think, like so many other people, in this city, and then you those late '90s, early 2000s teams with Stern John that you just absolutely. It's gonna be rough. It's gonna make you feel a number of ways, and it's gonna be fun though to be able to go out and tailgate too, because that's something we haven't been able to do even with these games that we've had with this limited capacity. So hopefully it's a full house, and to be able to be there with all our friends and family, it's gonna be awesome.
Now I imagine your cohorts, GC's G Bag, planned an extra extravagant tailgate this week, huh?
There's some things in the planning. Let's
okay.
Just say,
very good.
We should be getting there started around 3-4 o'clock. I expect Murderers Row will be within their 12th hour there by then.
They'll also be there 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Alex, I feel like it's going to be hard for you to narrow down your favorite memories of the old place.
Yeah.
I know I've been having a hard time with it because a lot of it, for me, is just the overall feel of the place, going there, taking my kids, and so forth. I have some moments in mind. Have you been able to narrow down a few moments that mean more to you than the others? Maybe beyond the obvious of winning a cup and so forth.
So, the moments to me, the cup is the thing, especially this last MLS Cup.
Because it was so surreal.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was at home, and it was coming off of this bizarre year that we all had to live through. That was the most surreal moment, for sure. I think my favorite moments were not so much the moments that you would think of, but just kind of some memories that jump out at me are, like, some of the rain delays where you would know. Nordica's a very fun place during a rain delay, because everybody has to go to the same spot. Everybody just kind of goes into their little groups, even if it's not the group that you sit with.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just kind of mingles. It's almost like a tailgate during the game. So some of those really bad rain delay, like lightning warning games are pretty memorable. There are a lot of games that I remember due to the goals that were scored, you know, a specific goal that was particularly memorable. The time that the scoreboard caught on fire is maybe one of my favorite moments.
Absolutely.
I was in the stands. I think I've told this story probably 15 times on this podcast, but I was in the stands and, you know, somebody, you know, just kind of like taps me on the shoulder and is like, "Hey, what's that like glow coming out of the out of the top of the scoreboard?" And you just see like a little bit of orange. And we were all kind of like, "It's not on fire, is it?" Like,
get your head around that.
A minute
later,
you see a little bit of smoke coming, and everybody knew what was going on. And I was laughing so hard that I was crying. That stadium has always been like this bare bones Erector set built on a budget. Nobody was sure it was going to work or not. And it's always been a little bit of a dump, but it's our dump. And it's I've got so many amazing memories there. That even though this new stadium is a massive upgrade, there's a not insignificant part of me that does not want us to move. It's going to be bittersweet for sure.
Well, I know that for high school players that have gotten to play there, my daughter's girls soccer team got to play there a couple of times. And I did PA announcing one year for the high school boys championships, the whole slate of games the whole day. And the one thing that the kids are and were so amazed by is the pool table pitch. And, you know, you could say that the stadium itself is kind of goofy and has its own charm. That field itself has always been so immaculate. And on that field, we've seen so many great moments. So you come at this more as a journalist, Murph. So maybe your favorite moments that you've reported on.
Yeah, well, it's funny because when I started going, like Bart, I was at the first game. I mean, until 2014, I was going as a fan, you know, so I have kind of both sides of that, as well as in, I don't know what grade I was in, I did a shadowing day project where I shadowed Mike Lapper, who used to work in the front office.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, it was very cool. And like, I'd been to games plenty of times, but I was in the front office and he was like, "Do you want to like walk around and see things that you don't normally see?" And so like he took me. I'd been in the locker room once when they used to do like season ticket, you know, I'd been in there, but he took me into like the visiting locker room and you know, just other parts of the state underneath. There wasn't the stage then, but underneath that part of the stadium where, you know, they still keep a bunch of stuff. I now with the stage, a lot of people have walked through there, but so that was a cool memory that like wasn't a crew game type of thing. But, you know, in terms of covering it, well, as a fan, the one thing that stands out among all others was the 2008 Eastern Conference Championship.
Yeah.
And we'll have a story about that game. We're continuing our memories pieces this week, and that'll be tomorrow's spoiler alert. But, yeah, that was that game. You know, the crew go down in that game, and I'm in the Nordec and just thinking all of this year was for nothing. If they
McBride's
lose this game.
Gonna do it to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And you know, I just remember, you know, I'd seen this team be really good before and just not be able to get over the hump multiple times. And it was like, this can't happen again type of thing. So that one always stands out to me. In terms of covering it, you know, the first time I ever did it when I was a student at Ohio State, you know, it was my first time in like a non-high school press box, even though that press box still feels kind of like a high school press box. You know, so that was unique. I was kind of like getting started on this career path. And, you know, I think being able to interview some of the guys that I've been able to at that stadium. And, you know, when they did the Landon Donovan tour his last year, they brought him and Bruce Arena into the post-game room, which was weird because no one there, you know, I don't think anyone LA media traveled, so like no one was prepared to ask Landon Donovan questions, but just to hear those two guys talk, you know, sitting at the same podium was cool. You know, and obviously, you know, Alex said the MLS Cup, both MLS Cup finals, covering them was cool. The first one, obviously the crew didn't win, but because of COVID this past year, they didn't have all the festivities. You know, usually there's a whole bunch of media. There's a media soccer game they play on the field. there's a media like party that they have a couple nights before the game where you just kind of interact with all these, you know, anyone from Alexi Lalas to Jeff Carlisle to, you know, all these different people, which was a really cool thing to do. So I've told Ori about that a few times. He's pretty upset that he missed out on that last year.
Well, he would have been in middle school.
Yeah. No, I mean, if they'd had it last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
but
and
yes.
in 2015, we played it at Ohio Dominican. On
oh,
the
yeah,
turf
sorry,
field.
They didn't do it. I didn't make it to that game because it was at 8 in the morning on a Saturday, and I was not
it was
in
very
the,
early.
I was not in the headspace.
You had a lot of late interviews the night before.
Yes, yes, yes. Working late, burning the midnight
yeah,
oil.
So those are the things that stand out from a crew perspective, but I think we should also touch on, like, there's been so much else outside of the crew that
oh, I know.
Ghost on Zero.
Yeah, and, yeah. like, you know, MLS Cup in when Landon Donovan kind of started his yeah. career, you know, the obvious U.S. national team games, but even, like, some of the concert stuff that they've had there.
Yeah.
I know this isn't,
mm-hmm.
that's not soccer related, but they've had some really big, you know, the I don't know what they called the show by the end, but what was Rock on the Range?
The Sonic Temple Festival,
yeah.
it was Rock on the Range. Yeah, I saw the most sunburned person I've ever seen in my life, perhaps the drunkest person I've ever seen. This guy...
You need to hang out with Bart more.
He was so red that I was concerned for his safety, but it was the festival where you go and you just get sunburned. And I drugged my daughter to that to see Soundgarden and Alice in Chains. And she's sitting there going, I don't get it. That's okay. You're stuck with Dad. Now we're Dad rocking with Soundgarden
oh,
and Alice in
best.
Chains. Took my wife to see Judas Priest rock on the range once. That was pretty awesome.
Wasn't that one of Chris Cornell's last performances, too?
It was the first time that Soundgarden played Rock on the Range. The second time he died literally the night before
that
they were
it.
Supposed to play.
Yeah.
Which is just absolutely tragic. One of my all-time favorites. I mean, such a great band. So I was glad I was there that night, especially in retrospect. Yeah, I mean, the radio station, we used to do concerts. We did one with Flogging Molly and the crew.
Yeah.
All
post-game
the time, yeah.
concert.
Oh, yeah. All
we
time.
Did
that
one.
That was a fun one.
We did it. Back at the beginning of the stadium, they used to just have us book bands. And we had, like, you guys are too young, but band from Milwaukee, the Bodines, that did pretty well in the early 90s, late 80s. They're a pretty good band. You know, kind of mid-level major label bands. And we'd bring them in, and there was no stage, so... If I remember right, they set it up in the south end
yeah. mm-hmm.
on the concrete.
They did that
they
a few times.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember at the second All-Star game that they had there, so that would have been like 06?
05. I have a T-shirt yeah. from that.
They had Bowling for Soup, and they put them down. Like, they moved the goal,
right.
and they had them down at the south end, and like, I don't know. Bowling for Soup was never my favorite band.
Yeah, they're all right.
Yeah,
they're good at what they do.
It was like
kind of
well,
goofy.
Yeah, it was nice to like see that in addition to watching. You know. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know if I was aware that was happening until like they popped up on stage and were like Bowling for Soup, and they're all in MLS jerseys that were clearly like given to them right beforehand because
right.
they didn't fit and you know.
Right. Oh yeah, I mean, you know, putting the stage in, what was. I don't know whose idea that was, but I love the stage. I love the setup. I love how they built it out mm-hmm. so you could have big – I mean, you need all
too.
That space back there, big space to do big shows. I thought that was a really smart idea. Are they keeping all the stands? I'm not clear on that.
Yeah, so
– because I know we're doing Weezer, Green Day, and Fall Out Boy in August. So.
Yeah, so I don't – I've been told that at some point – they think they're going to take off the upper deck just because for a lot of things they're not going to need that much stands. I don't know if that's for sure. I've just heard that. I know that was an idea at one point.
Okay.
But, yeah, I believe they're going to keep the stage and, you know, at least for the time being. But obviously they just opened, you know, the Ohio Health Performance Center. And so that's going to likely – they're going to turf the field, it sounds like. And they're going to have a bubble installed that will allow they'll go just over the field, not over the whole stadium.
Yeah.
But it'll allow them to do training all year.
Yeah.
Which they at times, you know, these last few years they've gone out of town for preseason and stuff. But there have been times when they've had to train up at what's that indoor soccer place up north?
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
First Kick.
Yeah. I think that's right. I should know that because I've played soccer there for a long time, and I have a friend who works there, so I feel bad. But, you know, that place is, they're all mini fields.
Yeah.
There's three kind of mini fields. So it, you know, it works for what they need, especially in preseason. You can do testing and stuff like that. But now they'll have a full field to, you know, put a bubble over, and you can, guys can come and train there in the off season. They don't have to, you know, go home, things like that. So, you know, as like Alex said earlier, it's going to be sad to say goodbye. Like, I think what they've got planned for this place is really cool. And having toured the facility last week, it's awesome. You know, it's great.
Help us attract players.
Yeah, I mean,
after seeing the facility,
I think so. You know, I mean, it is a huge upgrade over what they have. And I don't know how many people have been out to Obetz before. First of all, it's not in Obetz, which is and will save me a lot of gas mileage.
Yeah.
But you know, that place, it was really nice. The actual fields, you know,
yeah,
same grounds crew, yeah, so they did a very good job. Two fields, it was really, you know, it had this nice, quaint feeling. Two fields is fine for what they were doing out there at the time. But the building that it was in was like a two-room building.
Pretty
they've
small.
Kind of, yeah, they've turned into four rooms now with, you know, to kind of, they've just put walls in between, so you have smaller rooms even. And they've made do, but it has not been easy. And especially this past year with COVID, you know, they had to set up an outdoor space to meet. Yeah, they had like a tent with heaters, and they built a little like workout facility next to it, and you know, so to have all that included, and you know, they've got places guys can sleep and all sorts of food stuff, and they've got a barber chair in case that's what you're into. So,
cool.
Like, yeah, I do think it'll help. You know, yeah. Is that the difference between coming here and going to the LA Galaxy? No, but will that
can't hurt?
Yeah, will that put you ahead of some MLS teams? I mean, you know,
like LAFC, for instance, yeah, Bradley Wright Phillips.
I don't know what their setup is, but like, you know, the New England Revolution are sharing practice facility space with a football team, you know, an NFL team. And, yeah, and as nice as that facility probably is, I imagine being able to have your own thing. And, you know, the other thing is the academy will all be there, too.
Oh,
so
good.
They are, you know, you'll grow up, you know, if you're a crew player that makes it from the academy up, you'll grow up having been in that facility and, as Bez put it, brushing shoulders with some of the your favorite players, which is cool because currently they're just kind of all over, you know, wherever they have a field for those games and stuff like that.
And so they're really going to recognize the academy players, too, and the products that sign with – I saw the graphic picture on Twitter.
Yeah, they've got like a whole – they've got an academy locker room and like a space where the guys can like – study and watch film and things like that in there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and there's a space for this. What they want a second team, obviously, that's in the plans.
The USL
space
team
for that, or whatever it will end up being. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think they've thought of, you know, most everything in that place. Which I asked Bez when we were there last Wednesday. You know, why did you decide that this was the place to do it? You know, instead of just building a training facility somewhere, or you know, whatever, because no one's ever done this before. And, you know, he talked about kind of what we've all talked about, the memories that he has there and Pete has there and other people within the organization. They didn't want to just say goodbye completely. So I think it's cool that it's going to be repurposed this way.
I think it's funny that a lot of us are talking about all the things we're going to miss from Crew Stadium, and nobody has a single thing that they will miss at all about Obetz. Like, you know, the place was a – you want to talk about a dump. Like, geez, that place was really –
no. Yeah, it did serve its purpose, though.
I think my only good memory there was like an exhibition game that they invited like a small number of Nordeca fans to. And I'm trying to remember if it was Dayton Dutch Lions or FC Cincinnati. I cannot remember which it was. But it was like literally the first game that this team like played, and we put like a bunch of 15-year-olds out there and like kicked their ass. Like, it was really good.
Yeah, that could be either team.
Yeah.
I think for some reason I feel like it was. Oh no, wait. Was it like a Chicago team?
I don't know,
like Indy 11 or something.
It was Indy 11. That's
no.
What it was.
Yeah.
It was Indy 11. It was Indy 11's first game, and we put like Crew Juniors out there and beat them. Good times.
I got to say, the best part about Obetz, which, I mean, they're going to leave it, and we're talking about Crew Stadium, but just Obetz. I remember back in 08 when I first started, like, covering the Crew, and I found out that they trained in Obetz, and I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of far, but I'll go. And, like, I would go and hang out and, like, talk with the players, and Ziggy was like, yeah, that's cool. Hang out, like, for the entire practice. Like, this, to me, this was unheard of. And then, like, during the playoffs, like, at that point, I was starting to, like, take pictures for the supporters for the Nordic. And they're like, you're not taking video, right? I'm like, no, just pictures. And they're like, okay, that's cool. You can hang out for the playoff practice. I'm like, all right. That was a fun time.
Well, generally, things used to be a lot looser. And, you know, my favorite memories of the old place, back in the day, there were players that would come on my radio show all the time. And they became very good friends, Frankie and Brian and Kyle Martino and other guys. And just getting to know them personally and then seeing them achieve on the field, it was almost like it was surreal. And then you see them with the national team. But I think that the crew back in those days especially, they really did a great job of creating those personal bonds with the community. And you know, I had the privilege of doing that because of my job, but I really feel like that to your point, they went out of their way to sort of lower the barriers and make the team very accessible. Mm-hmm. Players used to make a lot more personal appearances.
The white tent next door where you used to
autograph
just be able
alley.
To...
Autograph alley.
Yeah. Autograph
yeah.
alley.
Yeah. Good yes. times.
You know, the mini pitch? I took my kids through that line more than once when they were really little, and they're like, their eyes are so wide. And as long as Crew Cat wasn't there, my daughter Anna was fine. She was terrified of Crew Cat. I remember she was 4 or 5 years old. She's hiding behind me. She's 23 now, and I still give her a hard time about that. But she was terrified of Crew Cat.
Now she's just scared of SC.
Right. But just those, it was a great place. My kids grew up there, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as they became teenagers, and they literally fell in love with the players. And Will Trapp, they would, you know. They would get the vapors when Will Trapp would come anywhere near them, you know, and they got to meet him. And, every time Will was fouled, they would get angry and shake their fists, like, how dare you touch Will Trapp? You know, that was our thing that we did as a family every year, you know. And that's the biggest thing I'm going to miss, is just being there with my kids and just – having that experience, getting there early, you know. What do you want to eat? Cramming pizza and junk food in.
Dollar brat night.
Yeah, dollar brat night, dollar beer night. Heaven forbid. You know, just that overall experience that place. Yes, it's a silly design, but it served its purpose. Very utilitarian.
And I think it's worth pointing out, you know, granted, it did go up very quickly, like Alex said, but at the time, you know, it's even hard to imagine it now, but at the time, like, it was cool.
Oh,
you know? Yeah. Like,
oh, absolutely.
In 1999, you know.
Still
the
cool.
field was the proper
yeah, still
size.
Cool.
Right, yeah. But, like, no, this didn't exist. I mean, it's hard to even think back to that point because, like, now there's soccer stadiums, you know, it's, unless you're Atlanta, it's a requirement to get into the league. You know, you need to have a soccer-specific stadium. So, you know, now they're a dime a dozen. But that and, what was it, Charleston Battery Stadium, was that the one that they argue about? Because
yeah,
they both
I
were built
so.
Around the same time. And but, you know, it was just like, I just remember my dad telling me, and I didn't appreciate it walking into the game as, you know, a 9-year-old or whatever I was, but, you know, he was just, couldn't emphasize enough to me at that first game, like, just how awesome this was. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he'd gone to a lot of soccer games in his life, but they'd always been at either NFL stadiums or high school football stadiums or things like that. And, like, you know, even though it did look Erector Seti and things like that, like, it was for soccer. It was, like, to your point, Brian, designed for soccer. So the field was right. Like, everything was catered to the soccer fans and things like that. And, you know, I think that we now kind of take it for granted because MLS has grown and every team kind of has it. But
and they had tried to build like a much more elaborate stadium a couple of times and failed. And Lamar Hunt was finally just like, screw it, I'm going to pay for it myself and just built this thing. And it was, I mean, I don't know where MLS would be today if this stadium was not put together. I think that's like the legacy of this stadium is like maybe the thing that proved out that like, okay, MLS is worth the investment. Soccer fans are worth the investment. If you build it, you know, that people are going to show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Lamar Hunt, handed this job to Jamie Roots, a guy by the name of Jamie Roots.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got this place built, and it didn't take long. And then he went on to the NFL until just a few months ago.
Was he with Atlanta?
Houston Texans.
Mm-hmm. He's a Texan.
For years. And with that franchise in the state that it's in, he decided that it was time to get out while the getting was good. But super sharp guy. And it's been so many years that I think a lot of people have never even heard the name, but it should be out there. I mean, he did such a tremendous job with the budget that he was given, and it wasn't much in terms of building a stadium. But look, it's still standing.
Yeah.
We have soccer games there. We have concerts there. It's a place where we built a generation of memories. And to your point, Murph, not only with the crew, but with the national team. I think the weather is one of the stars, as Alex brought up earlier, of the stadium. Some of my biggest memories are in weather extremes. 2001, my wife is very pregnant with my youngest daughter, and we go to the USA-Mexico game where it's so cold that Mexico won't even come out and warm up. And as Frankie Haddock has told me many times, you know, that's when they knew they had them, because they didn't want to come out and warm up. And Josh Wolf coming right at us at the old stands where the stage is now, scoring that goal, and a guy behind us throwing his beer in the air and just absolutely soaking my wife and I. And all we could do is laugh. And my daughter Izzy was there too, still a few months from joining us live on this earth, but she was there, you know. That was her first game. Pretty good first game, huh?
No, I mean that or I mean even just, you know, not even games played there, but in 2002 during the World Cup, those watch parties that they'd have and getting there at like 5, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning. Yeah. And just, I mean, that's building the community, right? That's growing the game. That's what, to create this place where all these weird, you know, soccer followers that you couldn't just walk into any bar and throw on a game, you know, back in 2002. And so that, I mean, that was awesome. The friendlies, the West Ham game, I always go back to where the West Ham supporters came in. There's a little bit of rough stuff. You know, I might have said some words to some folks after the game, just pointing out to some of the West Ham supporters that their English accents, I wasn't quite sure where those came from. It sounded a little bit more like it might have been Cleveland. But,
Calling them out, I love it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just...
What year was that?
It was 2008 or 2009. Eight? Okay. Oh, the middle of that championship run. I mean, it's just
West Ham good then? Because I mean, it took them a while to get back in the Premier League.
They were definitely in the Premier League. I don't know if they were, you know, Europa, but they were top half of the table.
Somebody's going to tweet me for saying this, but West Ham have never been good.
They're pretty good the last couple of years. They got some players.
And it's just all and I think the thing that I said to them too is just like, you have all these like folks that saw Green Street Hooligans and just got, you know, oh, that's my team. Oh, I'm gonna be a rough lad. I mean, you know, that game. You were talking about Will Trapp earlier. The goal he scored against
that's
Orlando
one of my favorite moments.
Absolutely,
it came out. It was like the clouds opened up and it was, you know, God pointing at Will Trapp.
Yep.
Because, you know, he never scores.
No.
And I literally said a second before the ball left his foot, when he kind of slid over to the right, I go, shoot the ball, Will. Bam!
You did it, Brian. That was all you.
I called it. But it was such a fun moment because it just, in terms of who scored the goal and when it happened, and ultimately, it didn't mean a whole lot, I suppose, in the grand scheme of things. But it was just such a great moment in a time when we needed great moments. And, you know, I miss Will Trapp, and I always think back to that goal and look at it finally. I have this dream that he'll finish his career here somehow. Could happen.
I'd love it. Yeah. I'd love to see it.
You know, another thing that I think of with my girls growing up in the game, being able to take them to see USA and New Zealand for that friendly, whatever that was, in November. It was kind of an unusually warm night. and just how much it meant to especially my youngest, Izzy, to these women that she watched on TV and was such a huge fan of, to see them. And they put, you know, they put a top flight U.S. team on the pitch that night. It wasn't like it wasn't a B team. And New Zealand was really good, too. So to see that, and I hope at the new place we can bring back those international matches that have kind of tapered off with all these new stadiums coming in.
The part of me wonders, I mean, this is maybe the dumbest idea I've ever had, and I've had some real bad ones on this show. But part of me wonders if we really need to win U.S.-Mexico and they take that upper deck off Old Cruz Stadium, if they're like, you know what, let's play that one in December in the Old Cruz Stadium in front of like 6,000 people.
It's kind of like when the Buckeyes play in St. John Arena every once in a while.
They would never do it because the tickets would have to be $500 each in order for U.S. soccer to get their paycheck. But that would be pretty cool.
Well, fortunately, they'll have a 20,000-seat stadium right down the road. They can play it there.
I hope that the mojo carries over from one to the other.
And Mexico's on a bus coming in from the airport. They're thinking, oh, we're going to play in this great new stadium we've heard so much about. They drive by the stadium, and then they turn, and they head north.
Surprise.
Oh, no.
Tiny Demon Fortress.
I'm not playing there tonight. They're watering the grass in the new field. We're going to take you to the old place.
Tiny Demon Fortress lives on.
Even when the crew or the men's national team were playing at that stadium, that stadium packed out for the Women's World Cup back in 2003. Mm-hmm. And it was Germany, Japan, France, and I can't remember who the... Argentina.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, there was no U.S. Women's National Team, and that place was still packed, and it was rocking. It was crazy. And those were great games.
Yeah, and I mean, like, even thinking back, you know, we've talked about a lot of good experiences there, like... The heartbreak, I think, that you've seen at some of those games. The one that always stands out to me is Tony Sané missing the penalty kick the year they first won the Supporters' Shield. Yeah, to New England. And, like, you know, without those moments, without the crew, you know, if the crew had just been a dynasty, you know, you need those moments.
I would have settled for that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you take it for sure. But you need those moments to make something like 2008 feel so special. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, winning is always great. Don't get me wrong. And if your team wins four straight championships, you're excited about it. But when you have those moments that, like, those almost hurt more than the wins, especially if you're used to winning so much. So, you know, games like that stand out to me, too. You know, I mean, obviously the early days, I guess this goes back to the old saying, but like even just the games against DC United, you know, not getting to play that Open Cup that they lost to Chicago in 98 when they had to move it from Virginia and they just didn't put it in Columbus. You know, again, this would have been at Ohio Stadium, but just like things like that, like then you get a stadium and you're like, all right, now we have kind of our own place. It's not the football field. And, you know, still sometimes they didn't get games that they should have and things like that. But I do remember Ray Hudson when he was the coach at Miami. They came for an Open Cup game and lost 1-0, I think, if I remember correctly.
That's your Miami Fusion.
Yes.
Right.
Miami Fusion.
Sorry, I forgot there's a new Miami team. I had to clarify. But, and he makes the comment afterwards because they were top of the Supporters' Shield or something at the time. And, you know, they lose to the crew in the quarterfinals, the semifinals, I think. And it was like, you know, we should have been sleeping in our beds. You know, Ray Hudson's accent. We should be sleeping in our beds tonight, and instead we're flying home disappointed. And, like, you know, just little things like that that just keep popping into my head about this. And I'm sure there'll be more as we get closer to the weekend that I think of. But, yeah, it's just been such a great place.
Well, and players that didn't come. Games, you know, these legends of the international game who finished their career, there's more that didn't, that would always seem to skip us for some reason, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why that would be. I'm particularly upset about David Beckham because I have a 2010 AC Milan shirt that I still need to get an autograph on from him. So, Murph, next time he's here from Miami, you need to, like, sneak me into the new stadium so I can get
that. He did come once.
I feel like he didn't want to fly.
He was shut down by Gino Padula the entire game.
Well, ironically, I had two female friends in college that only wanted to come to a crew game.
He had two female friends.
Yeah, those were the only two.
That's pretty good.
But it was the only crew game that they ever came to because they wanted to see David Beckham play. And Gino Padula, who I knew because I worked at Soccer Plus and he used to come in there all the time, got those girls tickets for the game, and I had to go meet his wife out in the crew park, the parking lot, the player parking lot beforehand, and the bus, the LA bus pulls in, and then there was a second group of cars that, had all dark windows and stuff, that, I'm not entirely convinced, or I'm not entirely sure that David Beckham took his own car to the game,
yes.
But I don't know what else those cars would have been.
That's what champions get to do, folks.
Yeah, no, that's
what happens when you score World Cup goals.
I will say in David Beckham's defense that I was at Bonnaroo right after Kyle Martino retired. And if you don't know anything about Kyle Martino, Fish was playing that year. And that's his favorite band. And during Bruce Springsteen, I sat in a field with Kyle Martino and Kyle's brother. And we passed around a flask of tequila. And he started talking about his time in L.A., and how he went to a party because of David Beckham at Tom Cruise's house. Because apparently Tom Cruise was trying to recruit David Beckham to Scientology. I don't think it worked.
Obviously.
I was going to say, this must have been around the time he was jumping on Oprah's.
Right.
Yeah. It's the best story I've ever heard.
He said, yes, he's really short, and he's darting everywhere like a gnat, trying to make sure everybody's having a good time. Are you having a good time? Are you a really super intense guy like you would imagine? He goes, yeah, actually. I go, well, what was David Beckham like? He goes, actually, he was a really chill dude. I remember, and this is, Kyle and Frankie, but they both are such chill dudes. And Kyle's like, yeah, we'd go down to the beach and build a fire, and I'd get out my guitar and play, and David would just come down and hang out with us and drink with us, He was really cool.
You do a really good Frankie Hayda.
Well, I've spent a lot of time with that guy.
Without sidetracking the entire podcast, this is somewhat crew related. Chris Burchell, who played for the crew, his kids are obsessed with David Beckham, and David still sends them a happy birthday video message every year. And Chris Burchell, without exception, will post it on his Instagram feed, and I love that. I think that's cool. He seems like a nice guy.
One guy who it was the opposite of David Beckham in the stories that we're telling, from my understanding, but did always come to Crew Stadium when he was healthy, Thierry Henry.
Yes.
Who scored, Bart and I both know Matt Lamson well, scored directly off a corner kick against Matt. I know Matt doesn't listen to this podcast, so I'm confident that that's okay for me to bring up. But
he brought it up, Matt, not me.
Yeah.
But I appreciated Rooney coming here, too, a couple years ago.
I will say, this was when Henry came to Columbus, I think that was the first time he came to Columbus. That was the first year, maybe the second year of Massive Report. And we actually got to do an exclusive interview with Thierry Henry on video in the visitor locker room. And he was he was fantastic.
Yeah.
He was probably one of my favorite, I'm standing in awe of Thierry Henry player type of thing. But he was great.
I'll close the Legends portion of this podcast at Crew Stadium with pretty much my favorite story from there. And then I'm going to go get a beer, and then we're going to talk about the Chicago game and make our picks. And if there's any more feels people want to get out, that's fine. It's great to be back with you guys. We're at Saucy Brew Works. Like and subscribe, by the way. It was the early days of the stadium, and John Harkes was playing for the Crew. And Carlos Valderrama came to town with Tampa. And, of course, John is a legendary needler. He will get under people's skin. He came on my show once, and I made him tea, and he was giving me shit for heating the water in the microwave. He was outraged. I go, well, how else am I going to heat the water? I don't have a stove.
He did live in England for quite a while.
I can't believe it. Just drink your tea and shut up. But I remember going to a game early on when he was playing for the Crew at the stadium, and he so got under Valderrama's skin that Valderrama turned around and spit in John Harkes' face. And the referee was standing right there looking at it, ran Carlos Valderrama, yeah. And that was very early in the match. Legendary John Hart's moment, right just a few yards away from where we were sitting.
Every team needs a player like that.
Oh,
he's a
great player too.
That's
but
the dark arts right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Love the dark arts.
He could get under anyone's skin. All right, I'm going to the bar. We're going to take a quick break.
Yep.
Are you guys just going to talk about me while I'm gone? Or?
No, I'm probably going to get a refill too.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to take a break, but we do want to remind you that you can pick up Saucy Brewers or Saucy Brew beers at any Giant Eagle or Whole Foods, or you can now have it delivered on demand through DashMart from DoorDash.
All right, after the podcast, we'll deliver a few beers too.
Or come down here. They've got swings. You can literally sit on a swing and drink your beer. It is wild.
It's a swinging beer.
It's outstanding. Yeah. I love this place, and I'm glad this is our new home. Saucy Brewworks here at 3rd Michigan in Harrison West. We'll be back in a moment as soon as we get refreshed here at Saucy Brewworks. And we are back on the Mass Report podcast, where we took a break literally so we could go to the bar. And the service was friendly and fast. And I have myself a juicy ASAP from Saucy Brewworks. You can do the same. You can come down and hang out with us. We're at 3rd Michigan here in Harrison West, the Saucy Brewworks, where they have swings at the tables, which is pretty awesome. Alex is enjoying a pizza. It looks delicious. You're sucking that down at an alarming rate.
I was trying to eat it in between segments here. It's really good.
It looks delicious.
Good crust, good sauce.
It looks delicious. Good. And it's just great to be back with you guys. We've been staring into a screen for 15 months. And here we are again with Sam on the controls. We sounding okay? We're doing all right?
Yeah, given what we have, yeah, we're sounding pretty good. Better
given
than
what,
Zoom.
Given almost what you have to deal with.
Almost anything. Almost anything is better than Zoom, really.
Yeah, well... we'll never forget it, that's for sure. A lot going on in world soccer as well. The Euros are underway. I was very impressed with Mr. Schick with the Czech Republic today with his two goals. I mean, the first one was actually more impressive. The second one was just bizarre where I don't know what the goalie from Scotland was doing so far off his line, but he looked up and made him pay. If you haven't seen the highlight yet, have you guys all seen this?
Longest air traveled for a goal in major FIFA competition history.
What was the measure on that?
50. It was just over 50 yards, I think is what they said. Like the second longest, I think, was David Villa. It was like 47 something yards out. So he had it by a ways.
Well, have we explained yet why? Has the goalie explained why he was so far off the line? I don't understand what he was doing.
Yeah, that was strange. Sometimes you play sweeper keeper, but when your team is that far in your half, like there's not much you're gonna do if you're that far out.
Yeah, I don't get that, and it kind of takes the luster off a match that I've been very much looking forward to: Scotland and England. Now Scotland has a -2 goal differential, and in any competition like this, you do not want to lose your first game and have a -2 goal differential. So I would say that by the time that match rolls around, it might not mean a whole lot.
Hey, don't you count out England. They can lose like the best of them. Okay?
That is true.
This is true. I do think back to they brought it up during the England game the other day, the great Iceland game from the last
Euro.
Yes,
that was awesome.
Which, who didn't fall in love with Iceland that day? I was pulling for England the other day because it's just like I enjoy so many of the players. I felt like Phillips, the Leeds guy, who I've been watching all season, very impressed with his play. The assist on the goal,
yeah,
I always thought he was in the right.
Good.
He was the man of the match as far as I'm concerned. People were...
I think of England a lot like, for hockey fans, it's like the Toronto Maple Leafs. And it's just like, they can have all the pieces, but they are going to explode in front of you. And it's going to happen at some point, and I can't wait to see it.
I couldn't have said that better myself. That was beautiful. I hate England. I don't really have a good reason for it, but...
Well, there's this, you know, this whole Revolutionary War we fought, you know.
Yeah,
that.
And that's kind of another example. I'm going to get myself into trouble if I keep talking, but like, it's another example where they have everything they need to win, and they just find a way to lose.
So. I think, you know, for me, I think it sort of connected to so much of the music that I love, which
that's,
is irrational.
That's fair. Yeah,
but I love so many bands and artists from England that it gives me a soft spot for England. And like I say, I feel like when I watch all the nations in this competition, I feel like I know all the players so well that it's interesting to see them play together. I felt like they started great, and then the middle was like a donut, you know, and then they scored the goal, and they had more energy.
So two things bother me about England fans. Number one is the fact that they say it's coming home literally every tournament,
yeah,
even when their team is horrible. Second is that for a number of years, they tried to make the case that Wayne Rooney was a better number 10 than Ronaldinho was, which,
I don't know about number 10. I mean, he probably did more on the field, but, yeah, I mean, that doesn't make sense.
I don't think Wayne Rooney is better at anything except maybe, like, male pattern baldness than Ronaldinho.
Well, I mean, this is an irrelevant conversation. I'm not even going to go down this route.
Well, what match is coming up here in the next few days are we looking forward to?
Tomorrow we've got Germany and Portugal, I believe.
Oh, that's not bad.
Tomorrow being Tuesday, depending on when people
yeah.
look at this.
It's not bad.
Hold on, I meant to have this open. When
that's
we
all right. Well, it obviously...
France-Germany, sorry. Hungary
France,
and... Yeah. France-Germany is Tuesday at 3. Hungary and Portugal is at noon.
I guess since we're doing a podcast, we shouldn't talk about what's coming up too much. We have no idea when people are going to listen to this. But... it's a great tournament. I love the Euros. So glad, you know, my daughter texted me after Eriksson collapsed with a frightening heart attack on the field, and she was upset about it. I go, well, when you think about it, the only better place for this to happen to someone is in a hospital, literally. You know, the medical staff were there. I haven't watched it. I can't watch stuff like that. But obviously we're so happy that they were able to save his life. And they may find that he had some sort of heart defect that was undiagnosed. You don't know. Certainly the rigors of soccer at that level are going to test anyone's heart. So it could have been a lot worse outcome.
Yeah, that was scary. And, you know, I think we've all probably seen crazy injuries and things. But this was – I was watching it with two guys on Saturday afternoon. And, you know, I'm watching the game as they're talking to each other. They hadn't seen each other in a while, and so they're talking, kind of looking at each other. And he goes down, and, like, for a minute I was like, oh, what, like, that doesn't look good. And then they, you know, stop the game, and they go up close to him, and, like, they turned him on his side very quickly. I thought he was having – I said to them, I was like, hold on, guys. Like, I think Eriksson's having a seizure. Like, just
yeah.
the way they turned him over to his side, like, and – you know, we all kind of got quiet and just, like, sat there, you know, and they're in mid-conversation, and, you know, they didn't show the replay of him going down, so I had to, like, explain, like, they were like, did he get hit? Like, did something? I was like, no, he just kind of checked to the ball and just dropped before, you know, no one passed it to him or anything, and, you know, it was just such a weird, you know, and these things do happen, I mean, unfortunately, but to see it on that stage... you know, in front of the world, literally, is scary. And, you know, thank God he's okay. I mean,
well,
you know,
kudos
they were able
to the medical professionals yeah. there who yeah. saved his life.
And kudos to Simon Kjær, the captain, who turned him on his side and made sure his
right.
tongue was unblocking
wow.
his windpipe. And then Eriksson's wife was in the stands, and she came running down and was crying, of course. And he kind of grabbed her and, like, talked to her and gave her a hug. And, you know, I mean, that's captain behavior, so kudos to him.
Well, the world, you know, will certainly gravitate toward Denmark if you're looking for
yeah,
somebody
absolutely.
To root for. That's quite a story. And at the age of 29, to have that happen,
yeah,
it's frightening.
Probably their best player ever. If I mean, he's certainly in the conversation. He obviously played at Tottenham for quite a while. Is at which Milan?
He just won the Scudetto
yeah,
with
Inter.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, like, you know, I mean, not that it matters how good of a soccer player you are when something like that happens, but this is a guy that a lot of, I mean, if you were on Twitter during it, there were reactions from people that aren't, you know, your soccer reporters that clearly know who this guy is because he's a pretty big name.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank God it turned out as well as it did. Now, USA-Mexico, because the game started so late and I get up at 4:30 in the morning, I turned it off at halftime. I wasn't feeling very good about that at all. What did I miss? I mean, should we take something away from the second half and the victory, or was it just was it just sort of luck, or should we feel heartened by this?
First half was trash. Second half, they showed a lot more resilience, and their response time was significantly faster. First half, they looked like they didn't know how to. Honestly, it reminds me of the Blue Jackets, where like you're passing from stick to stick, but you're making the pass so hard that the receiver cannot control it, or it gets off of their stick, or they have a hard time like keeping it within. But they fixed that in the second half. They actually got better in the extra time, where they were actually kind of pushing Mexico, and the penalty kick. It went to VAR, and it was like, wow, are we seeing Mexico getting CONCACAF? Because, to be fair, the referee was not great. But, yes, Mexico got CONCACAF, and CONCACAF in the best way possible, where they gave up the penalty kick, and when they got the penalty kick on the other end, it got saved.
Well, I think I made the right decision because it sounded like, in the highlights that I watched, that it was so exciting, I wouldn't have been able to sleep at all. So.
Yeah, it was. That game had literally everything you needed in a soccer game. You know, and some things you didn't, including the stuff that got thrown from the stands and the racist chants.
And if you need a reason
to have U.S. Mexico in a place like Columbus as opposed to a place like Denver, I was actually in Denver that weekend, completely coincidentally. And this is nothing against Mexican people, but the city is very Mexican prevalent, which I did not realize. And so you're going to get a big Mexican, you know, draw when you play somewhere like Denver. And, I mean, this was a kind of, I mean, it was a tournament, but, you know, the Nations League doesn't really mean anything at this point. But I will say that I think this is a good cap in the feather of not just Greg Berhalter, but this group. You know, it was really the first time they'd had pretty much everybody there. You know, I know Tyler Adams was banged up and didn't play a ton. You know, there's some other guys that probably would feature, but this was more or less a lot of the key guys finally getting together and, you know, finding a way. You lose Zach Steffen, he gets hurt. Obviously a guy, you know, when Mexico got the penalty kick, I'm like, this is going to be, you know, we know Zach can save a penalty kick as well as anybody, and you know, now they don't have him in goal, and you know, credit where credit is due, making that save and keeping, you know, keeping the lead there.
A guy who's out of contract now,
Ethan Horvath, who is a good keeper. Yeah. He was one of the guys. You know, Zach kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, he was a you know, obviously he was over in Europe before he came to the Crew, but he's a guy that Philly kind of let walk and didn't ever sign him to a homegrown contract. And there was like three or four young goalkeepers right around Zach's age that everyone kind of was, you know, who's going to be the next great U.S. goalkeeper? And Zach's obviously taken that spot, somewhat surprisingly. But Ethan Horvath was one of those guys. So, you know, a big opportunity for him. And, I still think Zach's the number one. But, you know, stepping in and playing like that certainly gets you something. But, you know, Christian Pulisic stepping up, getting the penalty kick. It wasn't the greatest performance offensively, as Sam said, especially in the first half. But, you know, when you find a way to beat Mexico, especially with a young team, I'll take it 7 days a week and twice on Sunday, because that's not something, and we saw it in the Gold Cup last time around, like that's not something you get all the time.
Well, and you saw it like 2 days later in their game against Costa Rica. First of all, that Mexico game was super chippy from like all the way through. Yeah. But you saw it in the second game against Costa Rica, where they really kind of like, I think Greg had eight substitutions, like eight players that started that didn't start the Mexico game. And they just ran circles around Costa Rica. And they were a young team. They were, the average age was like 23 and 200 days or something like that. So, like, that really gives you a good feeling about the future. Yeah, they're going to have some lumps. But how they responded in that Mexico game, how they turned around and basically the second, I don't want to call it the second team because it just, whoever didn't play in the first round got to play in that second round, came out and really torched a decent Costa Rica team.
And Alex is a fan of the, you know, the Masters of the Dark Arts, and we started to see that from Gio Reyna in that game, how he draws that penalty, and then I love that he
that
went and took it.
Pulisic, in the Costa Rica game.
Yeah, the Costa Rica game. He draws the penalty, just kind of finding that guy on the edge of the box and sort of throwing himself in there to draw it, and then he went and took it himself from someone.
I have made a lot of statements on this podcast over the years, but one thing I've been consistent on is that diving is very good. If you have a good diver on your team, it can make all the difference when the chips are down. One thing I want to add on the Mexico game, though, that photo of Christian Pulisic shirtless shushing the Mexico crowd is like one of the hardest photos in the history of Major League Soccer, or not Major League Soccer, U.S. Men's National Team. Like, that is an iconic photo of him and the entire team behind him just like, we'll take anybody. We don't care.
And that Reyna kid, he's
amazing.
He is the key that unlocks the door for this team. He's so great on the ball. He's so great at breaking down people one-on-one. I love watching him play. Such a bright... How old is he? He's like, what, 19?
19. Playing at Dortmund where he's only going to get developed. I mean, look at the guys that just keep getting produced by that team.
Yeah? I mean, it's outstanding.
This is the difference between our top talent today versus our top talent a decade ago. It's that Reyna, in a previous generation, would have been playing for like Miami Fusion, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they would have been like, yeah, just do some laps or something, man. Like, yeah, we'll talk in like 3 hours. It'll be fine. And he's, like you said, Murph, he's with Dortmund. They are going to put the best people around him.
Yeah, and
he
already
is going
to grow. He is already, you can see his game has developed.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people didn't watch a ton of him because he was, but when he was with the youth national team and stuff like that, like, you saw potential. Now you're seeing it getting actualized. And that doesn't, like you said, Alex, that doesn't always happen. Especially if you're here in MLS or, you know, you go to a, like, I was listening, who's the midfielder that's at Barcelona who is, like, broken into their, the American kid that's broken into their first team, but he's not seeing any action. You know, it was a cool story when he got signed by Barcelona. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. They were just talking about him on the radio and I was on my way here. But, you know, it's cool that you get...
Not Dest.
And he's not really playing just because Barcelona's so loaded. But you go to a place like Dortmund where they want to play kids.
Yeah.
But the one thing I will say, Brian, you know, is for the attacking players they have, this team needs a forward, you know. And I don't know if Giassi Zardes is the guy.
Do you bring in the old man with all these kids?
You talking about Josie?
Hell no.
Giassi Zardes.
Oh, okay.
I thought you meant Josie.
Compared to these guys, he's an old...
Well, I mean, I think, honestly, I think Josie will probably be at the Gold Cup. You know, Greg knows what he has in Josie right now. Giassi. So he doesn't need, you know, he doesn't need those guys to come in. And Josh Sargent isn't doing it for you right now. There's not a clear guy. And so Giassi's certainly going to be in the conversation. But as much as we all like Giassi and what he can do in MLS and stuff like that, you wish you had a guy who's competing over, like Pulisic, like Reyna,
right,
who is, you know. And Sargent has done decently over in Europe, but, you know, it's just not, it's not clicking yet. And maybe
now's the time to take a look, though, and see if Giassi can gel with these guys as we build up to qualifying.
They have good speed on the edges. And if you get good speed on the edges and you can get those crosses in, That's Giassi's bread and butter.
Yeah, I just worry about Giassi in a World Cup against you know a real
sure
national team.
Well, which you probably need. We're not talking about one guy. We're talking about three guys that we need to find. You know, and then you can pick and choose based on form and so forth. I don't know if we have those guys.
Who's the kid that scored the first goal versus Costa Rica off the rebound?
Yeah, it's got a strange name. I was trying to think of it while we were talking.
There was a couple of times where he literally was dancing like two or three guys in the box.
He was impressive
and had some great passes.
This is again probably a terrible idea. Do we need a target man? Like, is a target man really what we need? And if we need a target man, Wando. Bring him back.
I wouldn't say he's out of the question. And I think with the way Greg plays, you probably do. I mean, the crossing, you know, we all know it very well, right?
He needs a Kai Kamara.
Yeah,
he needs
exactly.
A Kai Kamara.
And too bad Kai's not eligible for the U.S. national
team.
Oh,
no!
What are the thoughts
on
Dyke?
An MLS roster?
I mean, Dyke, can you bring him back to MLS, really, and have him playing with Orlando? I mean, if we're talking just from U.S. men's national team development standpoint, right, he's got to transfer permanently somewhere in Europe.
Brendan Aaronson.
Aaronson's not a striker.
No, that's not who.
No,
you're talking about the guy who's.
Didn't he score? He scored the first goal, didn't he? Am I missing it?
Yeah, he's more of like a number 10.
He's a 10.
Right.
The Philly kid.
But he.
Nah.
But what I'm saying is, yeah.
Oh yeah.
But what I'm saying is that he kind of provided that, like the U.S. was basically almost playing with three forwards. You know, you had way up front. You had Yunus was your number 10. And then who was the other forward? I don't remember.
Well,
I was
kind of put a bow on this.
Yeah. So I mean, they showed their youth by being able to dance around a lot of the Costa Rican defense. I mean, former Crew defender. Now my brain just totally farted.
Giancarlo.
Yeah, Giancarlo Gonzalez got burned on that second goal, like big time.
Thank you.
So this is good. This is good to see. This is good to have. Now, can they
be consistent?
We have
good problems, which is further than I thought we were going to be. I'm optimistic about this bunch, and I like the direction that we're going in. And it's not just because of the Mexico game. All right, so we have an actual game on Saturday night at 7:30 against, well, games where you're closing your historic Crew Stadium. You want to feel pretty good. It's kind of like Ohio State. You want to schedule a cupcake for homecoming. We have Chicago Fire, who are besting only Cincinnati in the Eastern Conference standings there, Alex. 4 goals, 4, 11 against. That, according to my feeble math skills, would be a -7. This team is a mess. And they've been a mess for a long time. And they're in Chicago. That's a great soccer town. They should not be a mess. And yet, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like the late 2000s Cleveland Browns of Major League Soccer. I mean, they're just, no matter what you put in, you're getting losses out of it. They're not a team with a strong identity, as far as I can tell.
They've never had one.
You know, on or
at
off
least
the
not
field,
for a long time.
They're the only team that's rivaling us in terms of like how bad their logo is.
For now,
theirs is worse.
It's getting changed, right?
Theirs is
that's
worse.
Chicago's logo.
Yeah, they're doing like their third rebrand in like 4 years or whatever. I mean, this is they're a mess. I don't know. This is not a game that I get super nervous about.
Barrich is an important player for them. He has one goal on the season.
Yeah, I mean, he was up for
a lot.
He was the guy I thought would win Newcomer of the Year last year, and they gave it to Lucas Zelarayán, which I think was almost a credit. You know, the Crew had Aloy up for Goalkeeper of the Year. He didn't win. Jonathan up for Defender of the Year. He didn't win. It's like, well, Columbus has been really good all year. We need to give somebody an award, you know, like and Frankowski, who's been one of their better creative players, is in the Euros, played today, so he won't be there. And, yeah, I mean, as you said, Brent, this is a team that has not played well. Now, granted, they've had 3 weeks off, so we'll see, you know, maybe they throw a wrinkle or something. The only real concern I have about this game is the team getting too caught up in kind of the emotion of the day. And I don't think... You know, we all have our thoughts about this. I think as much as these players love, you know, what they did last year and things like that, you know, most of these guys aren't Will Trapp, you know, who grew up going to games there, all of them. Some of them did. But, you know, so I don't think there is a huge emotional, as big of an emotional attachment as we have. I don't want to downplay it for them, but, you know, that's the only minor concern that I have is that, and maybe a little bit of rust. You've been off 3 weeks. Now, they did scrimmage last Saturday, so they did try and kind of keep the game rhythm going, but obviously that's a little different than playing a, you know, competitive MLS game in front of what will be hopefully a packed house, because no capped attendance for this one.
I would think so. I mean, we're expecting a sellout, right?
Yeah.
I would think so.
That's the hope. And the other thing is you've got guys coming back. You know, this break has got guys coming back from injury, right? So Milton Valenzuela should, you know, ostensibly be starting.
That's a good point.
And then do we get a chance to see Hot Boy? Is it Hot Boy Summer? Kevin Molino?
Yeah.
That's what I'm interested in.
That is a great point, Bart, that we haven't even touched on, is we have these guys who've been on the shelf. And in Molino's case, we haven't even seen him yet. Yeah. Who are we going
to
see?
Caleb said, last time we talked to Caleb was last Friday. No, two Fridays ago. That's how good the communication has been between us and the team so far. Don't get me started there. But, Caleb said at that point he is hopeful that Milton and those guys, you know, the guys that have played will be back and good to go. And he said Molino could – he's like, I'm not ready to say he's going to be ready to start a game, but, you know, that could be a game where he can come in off the bench and maybe get his feet wet. So,
probably the wisest course, right?
Sure, sure. And I think that this has been a game that they've pointed to for him for a while now is – okay, let's get him through. And, you know, we were out at training a couple times before then, once each of the previous 2 weeks before the break started. And Molino was doing, you know, going through some exercises, running hard. You know, you could tell they were gearing him up. And it's, you know, I understand why you don't risk it right before. You got 3 weeks to then keep that going, build up that fitness. So, you know, he looked, from the little that we saw, it was only, you know, 15 minutes at the beginning of practice, but the little that we saw, he looked like he was a guy getting more ready to play than a guy that's still recovering from an injury.
All right, and I'm glad we brought this up because just before the end of the semifinals in the Nations League, Diaz was sent home by Costa Rica with a knee injury. What do we know?
Yeah, Caleb said it was minor. Okay. It wasn't something that made sense for him to stay because he wasn't going to play in those games, but it sounded like, you know, a week or two. So I imagine he's back in training this week. Again, we're not out there as much as I'd like to be at this point now that they're in the new facility and we're here in a bar together, much closer than we would be on the field. Yeah. It sounded like it wasn't anything he was overly concerned about.
Okay, that's good, because when that story hit, I'm like, of course.
Right.
Of course, as far as injuries go, anything else we need to know?
I don't think so.
They have an announcement tomorrow. The team has an announcement tomorrow.
Can't hear
I said,
yourself.
Oh, that's right. I'm talking on a microphone. You don't have headphones.
Yeah.
I said the team has an announcement tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Sam.
Well, other than injuries, yeah, I don't think – I think – you know,
naming
unless,
rights?
Yeah, that's what we're looking at tomorrow.
So is it going to be, the so-and-so field at – Blank Park, or is it just, I know there's the whole to do, is it going to be lower.com, the leak, quote unquote, that came out last week that it's lower.com, but are we going to have multiple naming rights here, or is it just going to be one?
Who.com?
Lower.com
Lower.
Was what was at least, apparently it was,
what is
it
that?
Came out
I think it's something like
mortgage refinance.
Yeah, it's like Rocket Mortgage type of thing.
Yeah. They're a local-ish company. I don't know.
Oh, like lower rate.
Yeah.
Lower. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like
know.
The Chicago White Sox, guaranteed rate field.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I don't know what they will officially announce
at
tomorrow.
Wendy's Park.
Yeah. I don't know how they'll do it. I would just say, lower your expectations. That's what
I'm saying. All
right.
Well, I don't.
Shout
care
out to
about
Patrick Goldin on that. If
you would have told me, I would have had that sound bite queued up.
Lower your expectations.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, look up lower expectations Mad TV and you'll understand.
While we're on it real quick, I just think it should be pointed out that I think we all would have liked it to be a nationwide Huntington Park, you know, something like that, especially given you're right next to those two venues and, you know, kind of a splashy, everyone around the league is like, oh, that's a good state, you know, good, you know, sponsor for them, partner, whatever you want to call it. I think ultimately what matters the most is that it's the best deal that they got. And I don't mean just financially, but in terms of a partner that's going to work with them and things like that. A lot of that stuff happens behind the scenes. You know, Mafre wasn't exciting. No one knew what Mafre Insurance was. But it put a naming rights on that stadium, which hadn't had it yet. This is obviously a new stadium, so, you know, you think that everyone is going to be after it. And maybe they were. I don't know how everything happened. But if it's a lower.com, if it's something that maybe isn't as splashy, you know, they want to be a local thing. And so, you know, if that's the people that came to the table with the best overall package, yeah. and maybe it doesn't appear that way from the get-go, you know, I think we kind of wait and see if it's, and, you know, maybe it's something else, and, you know, maybe that leak was, who knows what that was. But I'm just saying, if it's not on the level of Nationwide and Huntington Park type of thing, there could be reasons for it behind the obvious. And, you know, obviously they'll say all the right things tomorrow, whatever it is. But, you know, I know people, if it's not something they've heard of, they're going to immediately get up in arms about, you know, what Steve Lyons is doing and all this, you know.
Well, I heard that Lionel Messi's brother works for Lower.com, so I just wondered if that has anything to do with it.
Well, I'm so old that I remember when stadiums didn't have names.
Yeah, exactly.
But we can't all be Yankee Stadium, can we? It's like whatever.
It's still going to be New Crew Stadium.
You know, like, it helps you to...
it's still Jacobs Field, like, right. And I think what Progressive or yeah, State Progressive, Farm or whoever does, who knows.
No matter who it is, people are going to be mad, and everyone who's mad and everyone who is not mad are still going to call it Crew Stadium anyway. Think before you tweet.
Or
that's all I'm
going to
say.
Going
back
think to the beginning of tonight's podcast, maybe it'll be called the Kingdom.
There we go.
I was really hoping for the White House, but
I mean, that's the thing. Like, there would have been some good brand synergy if it was, instead of being, you know, the black covers and everything, if it was white, then White Castle. That's like, boom, it's right there in your lap. That would be terrific.
Perfect.
Local brand. Who
it's
knows?
Perfect.
But
all right, let's make our picks and get out of here. Thanks again to Saucy for having us. We'll be back next week and going forward at our new home here at Saucy Brew Works. Saucy Brew Works, the best beer in Columbus and the place to be in the world, Saucy Brew Works. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? We're at 3rd Michigan in Harrison West, a lovely location. They have what I love is the big garage doors that they open, let the air in. It's so chill. And your pizza, Alex, right?
Pizza was pretty good. Yeah. Pizza was pretty good.
They've got buzzer, like Jeopardy trivia here. We came last week. And so come here on Wednesdays and beat me. I mean, see if you can. It's tough.
I imagine you're good at trivia.
I'm all right at a couple things. I got the hockey trivia pretty well. Yeah.
The Massive Report.
We should do a lot of music trivia.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I got you.
We should get a lot of – we should get extra points because we're here on Mondays.
Yeah.
You give us bonus points to start with.
All right.
And don't forget that you can pick up your saucy brews at any Giant Eagle or Whole Foods, or you can now have it delivered on demand through
that is a good
Dash
point.
Mart from DoorDash.
That is a good
alcohol
point.
Delivery. My goodness.
What a world. What a time
century.
To be alive.
Yep.
That's the best thing COVID did for the world.
Doors and alcohol deliveries.
Hey, speaking just of nice things and brew related, did you guys though see the thing that they're pushing to have Nationwide Boulevard become an open container area?
Yes.
I don't know the exactly, or is it, it's a special event zone or something?
Dora.
What's the word with that? Do you have any details, Alex?
I don't.
Okay,
I
well.
I don't. It's
Vegas.
I think it's with the mayor, right?
For game days,
right.
if the Blue Jackets, Crew, or Clippers are playing, the Nationwide Boulevard, you can just basically walk down, open container. So, like, you could really, we could go to Betty's, get ourselves a brew from Betty's and a little plastic cup to go, and then walk our way over to Nordeck.
Oh, my God.
This has actually been rolling in a lot of suburbs.
Finally,
so, like, Dublin has it. Westerville is trying to pass one. I believe there's a couple of other places that do have
Dublin
it,
out by, like, Urban Meyer's Pint House, that whole
right,
area.
Right, by Park. By
they've talked about doing this at some part of High Street for years.
Yeah.
Like, the Short North, they've always said, well, since the Short North has been nice and not what it was before. But, so if they actually make this work, that would be a really cool feature for all those
things. Yep. I have that fear that one day there's going to be a triple header going on where you have, like, a noon baseball game, a 3:30 or a 4
it's just
o'clock.
Patriots Day. It's awesome. You just make sure 4 that
o'clock
not
puck
at the
drop
same time.
And like a 7:30 crew game.
Yeah, the parking will be the problem.
The parking will be the problem.
Parking's already going
to
be a
problem.
Well,
you just go to all of them and you start at the early game and you just leave your car there and then for a little day.
It could be a Columbus Experience Columbus ticket package.
Yeah.
You get the triple header.
Outstanding. Well, we got to get out of here because I just saw a guy walk in with a Seattle Kraken hat on.
Ooh.
I don't know what's going
on.
All right, let's make our picks and get out of here. Alex, you're last. Murph.
I'm going to say that the opposite of my fear comes true, that this team comes out ready to go, building on the fact that they finally scored two goals from the run of open play last game, and gets a 3-0 win against the Fire, who, as you mentioned, Brian, have only scored four goals all year.
Mark.
I'm going to go with, did a highly scientific a simulation earlier in that I played
simulation.
FIFA, and I won 4-1 on that one. And really, and that last goal that I gave up was really more on me. I think the crew can close it out. So we'll call it a clean 4-0 clean sheet. Josh Williams is going to go ahead. Yep.
Yes.
The dagger. Get subbed on. Vito, they just want to make sure that he's all right. And Josh Williams, the Ohio boy, in final game in Cruz Stadium, bicycle kick.
Don't we have to have a Josh Williams brace?
Oh, God, yes. Get subbed in as the striker because they're up 2-0 and they just know that Josh is like, look, this is a Chicago team. It's only scored 4 goals all season. BWP, we're going to let you take this one off. Don't worry. Sub in Josh as the striker there for Jossie, at the 80-minute mark, and Josh with a quick brace.
You're assuming that he's not even starting the game.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Maybe they just bring in Vito and move Josh straight up into striker for the rest of the game.
Yes. I want my Josh Williams goals, plural, in this game. That's what I'm looking for more than anything else. Sam.
I understand Murph's fears, and I have those fears anytime you play Chicago, even if they're total trash. But since they are total trash, and I hope they continue to be, I'm going to say it's going to be 2-0 crew.
Two nothing crew.
To the disappointment of friend of the show, Eric Gehrig, who will be in town for this game.
Very sensible pick. I'm going to pick, and then I'm going to give it to you, Alex.
Sounds good.
You're like, I got to get my pick. I was going to give a really outrageous pick, but since you're going last, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be a little more sensible. I do pick the Josh Williams goal. I don't think there'll be two. That would be a dream come true.
Oh, yeah.
But I like one. 3-0. 3-0 crew. I like a nice, tidy performance and lots of singing and lots of tears on Saturday night.
We're sorry to our friends. No 3-1 crew picks so far.
Alex?
I think I'm going to go with 0-0. Only kidding. Only kidding. 2-0. 2-0 win for the crew. I like the Josh Williams goal. I like that a lot.
All right. Fair enough. Well,
I do want to say something else before we close this, and I can't believe we didn't talk about it. But can we really talk about how pretty those championship rings are?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we were going to talk about
the
rings.
The ones
do you
want
to get me really
anybody.
Worked up and tell you about how they did a private event after telling how they wanted to commit to the fans and do fans things?
No. That's why I'm talking about just the ring. I don't want to talk about anything else because that'll piss me off.
Yeah, the ring's awesome, but we'd all be able to see it better if it were in person.
Right.
Would you?
I agree 100%.
It's a ring. I don't know. I'm a fan, and I'm really fine just watching the video on Twitter. I would not have gone down to watch other guys get rings.
I would not have either, and then they would have had to have, like, those cheapo, like, fan version rings with, like, glass diamonds that you
Which
could buy
they are
for, like,
having.
$60.
Yeah, that's just
they
for
to, like,
all the staff.
In.
Friend of the podcast, Neil Sika, got one. He asked me
the
how
real
much
one?
I wanted, how much I'd pay for it. I was like,
no,
I'll
he
give
didn't.
You $10.
He didn't. You're not, you didn't, that was parody, D. That was parody.
All right.
Neil,
well,
I'll give you
$45. We don't have time for Merv to rant. Usually we rely on other people to rant. Alex and Bart, certainly. But we got to get out of here. Thank you, fellas. It was great to see you again in person. We've been staring at a screen at each other for months. We'll be back here at Saucy Brew Works going forward. And we thank them for having us tonight. I think we were pretty good guests.
Yeah.
You know, once we figured out how to order for ourselves and things like that,
right?
Which is part of going out into the world.
Yeah, interacting in public is tough.
All right, so Bart will be your first tailgater at 8 a.m. on Saturday. Kickoff at 7:30. Let's all just drink it in and have a great time on Saturday night and celebrate our old friend Crew Stadium on its last night hosting your Columbus Crew. For Murph, for Bart, for Alex, for Sam. Thank you, Sam, for bringing the gear and making it all sound good. My name is Brian. Listen to my radio station, CB92.9. I'd appreciate it. I'd appreciate it as well if you'd like and subscribe to this podcast. And we'll talk to you next week on the Massive Report Podcast.